Hi, I'm Carol from King City, California.
I'm Amy from San Francisco.
Hi, I'm Becky from Amherst.
The Sound of Young America is an independent production supported by listeners like you and me.
If you'd like to donate to support the show,
visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate. Bye-bye.
Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, I'm Jesse Thorne, and this is the Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org.
Radio sweetheart, on the airways.
In just a second, we'll have a private audience with the singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton. Jonathan has a brand new CD-DVD set called Best Concert Ever, which I'm told is properly pronounced Best Concert Ever. I did the best I could, okay? Here's a bit of one of that set's sillier songs, IKEA.
Long ago in days of yore, it all began with a god named Thor. There were Vikings and boats and some plans for a furniture store. It's not a bodega, it's not a mall. They sell things for apartments smaller than mine, as if there were apartments smaller than mine. IKEA, just some oak and some pine and a handful of Norsemen. IKEA, selling furniture for college kids and divorced men. And everyone has a home, but if you don't have a home, you can buy one there.
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest on the program is a favorite guest here on the Sound of Young America, a singer-songwriter who in his mid-30s quit his IT job to pursue his dream of becoming a musician, and has succeeded to a really extraordinary extent, becoming the internet's troubadour, if you will, and I just did, with sweet, funny songs about some very unusual topics. Jonathan Colton, welcome to the Sound of Young America. Welcome back to the Sound of Young America.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
It's always a pleasure to have you, sir. How long ago was it now that you quit your job?
It was the end of 2005.
So this is 2009, so we're looking at 4 years?
4 years. God, wow. That's, yeah.
How does it feel to look back on it? What seems more or less important than it did at the time?
It's more than anything else, it's just remarkable to me. It still seems amazing and unlikely that this is happening to me. And the fact that it has been happening for 4 years, I hadn't actually done that calculation. In my head, I would have said 2 years, but it's been 4 years that I've been making a living as a musician. And really, when I started, I didn't expect that it was going to work out at all. So it's incredible to me that it seems to be a sustainable career.
You were already into your 30s when you decided to do this plan. Had you had professional music dreams and then abandoned them and picked them back up or something like that by that time?
Yeah, I had always intended to become a musician, but I never really got around to it. You know, I went to college and then moved to New York City, and you know, I played in a couple of bands, but I wasn't really sure how to do it, and it was hard. And you know, when you play in your new band that you've just gotten a couple of friends together to form, you know, your other friends come out and see you, but that's about it. It's very hard to get any traction, and it's very disheartening. So you know, push came to shove, and I ended up getting this software job. It was sort of a friend of a friend had the software company, and I started out answering phones at the front desk and learning how to write code in my spare minutes there at the front desk. And before I knew it, I had been there for almost 10 years, and that was my career. And while I was still doing music on the side as sort of a hobby and, you know, in connection with my pal John Hodgman and his work, I sort of lost touch with the idea that that was going to be a career for me.
What made you think again that it could be?
It was a number of things. You know, I had, as I say, I continued writing And I had put out a CD just for fun, you know, because I could. I had, you know, some recording equipment at home and manufactured a number of copies and was selling it online through a company called CD Baby. And, you know, I would occasionally get an email from a stranger, which was always very exciting. And I had just started doing some more stuff with John Hodgman, and which meant that I was playing in public in front of audiences again. And, you know, I was getting a positive response to the stuff that was out there. So that sort of gave me the idea that maybe something could happen if I worked a little harder at it instead of just doing it in my spare time when I wasn't at my job, you know.
What was the impetus to actually do it, to go from... So I think the first time we met was a right around that time, 4 or 5 years ago, and you were on tour with John Hodgman, the comic writer and on The Daily Show. Before he had had any success, the two of you were doing a book reading in San Francisco that had, you know, 10 people at it or something like that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah.
That includes myself and my wife and the guy who was driving you around and the people who worked at the bookstore.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. It's true. I was sort of right there to see his rise to power. And it was a very inspiring thing because he quit his day job first. You know, he was
guys had been friends since college, right?
We've been friends since college. And we both had, background radiation dreams of fame and success and instead had jobs. You know, and he had left his job a couple of years before I did to become a freelance writer. And then he started doing this little Grey Book lectures. And so it was a very inspiring thing to see him do that. And right around that time when you came to that San Francisco reading and nobody was there, he appeared on The Daily Show for the first time. And that was, you know, that was sort of the precipitous event that made him into a famous person. And so to watch that happen was very exciting. And to be along for the ride, you know, I guess a little bit of that rubbed off on me. And it felt like, oh, maybe I could do that too, you know.
You did it just as your wife was pregnant with your first baby, wasn't it?
Well, it was after she was born. Actually, we probably had the conversation about it when she was still pregnant. But, yeah, that was a big part of the impetus as well, because it was sort of a wake-up call in terms of my own mortality. I don't know if other people feel that way, but that was one of the things I felt the most keenly, is like, oh, wow, I get it. Now I'm a dad. My dad just became a grandfather, and my grandfather is dead. So I see where this is going, you know? and on top of it, I felt a new pressure to be a good role model. And for me, you know, I started looking at myself through my daughter's eyes. And what would I see if I were my daughter? And, you know, the answer is I would see a guy who had aspirations and who maybe had some talent and just never took the chance and instead got bogged down and stuck behind the safety and comfort of a job that was not really what he wanted to do. And that is not, I didn't want to look like that to her. And I wanted her to be able to have the ability to make the brave choice. And in order to do that, I needed to make the brave choice. So a lot of it came from that as well.
You wrote this really beautiful song about your daughter called You Ruined Everything.
Yeah.
I wonder, would you play it?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
I was fine. I pulled myself together just in time to throw myself away. Once my perfect world was gone, I knew you ruined everything in the nicest way. You should know how great things were before you, even so. They're bitter still today. Now I can't think who I was before you ruined everything in the nicest way. Bumps in the road remind us the worst of the best behind us. Only good things will find us, me and you. Days will be clear and sunny, and we're gonna need more money. And baby, you know it's funny, all those stories coming true. Despite my better efforts, it's all for you. The worst kind of cliche. I'll be with you till the day you leave. You ruined everything in the nicest way.
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton, who's been a friend of the show for many years and kind enough to consent to give us a little house concert, if you will. That song was You Ruined Everything. Thank you for that, Jonathan.
You're welcome.
Another, one of my favorites of your songs is also a dad song. It is a dad song of a very different sort. That is this song, Shop Vac.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about the song and how you came to write it?
Yeah, it's about being trapped in suburbia and I guess being trapped in adulthood and responsibility. I wrote the song. I was using a shop vac at the time. It was a Saturday morning. And the apartment building that I lived in at the time had a little roof deck on the roof in Brooklyn, and some plants up there. And you know, I had borrowed my neighbor's shop vac, and I was vacuuming up old leaves and sticks and dirt and things. And Saturday morning, beautiful sunny day. My wife and new daughter were downstairs. I didn't know what they were doing. And I was just sort of whistling to myself and completely happy. And it was a bizarre moment. I said to myself, when did I become this guy? You know,
because it's sort of that it almost has a quality of kind of cardigan wearing television dad from 1962.
Exactly. And you know, I find it kind of loathsome, and yet I find the comfort of it unable. I can't stay away from it.
There's also kind of almost an angry undertone to that character. You know what I mean? Almost a hostility to family.
Yeah, the character in the song is, yeah, he's definitely had enough. He's really about to crack, and yeah, there's something about the inanity of his surroundings and the things that he finds himself talking about that are just slowly driving him crazy.
Well, do you want to play Shop Vac?
Yeah, let's do it.
We took the freeway out of town, found a place to settle down, got a driveway and a swing set and a dog. You got your very own bathroom. I got my very own workshop in the basement. We sit around staring at the wall to wall. Take field trips to our favorite mall. Waiting for the day when all the kids grow up and leave us here. If you need me, I'll be downstairs with the shop vac. You can call, but I probably won't hear you, because it's loud with the shop vac on. But you'll be okay, cause you'll be upstairs with the TV. You can cry and I probably won't hear you, because it's loud with the shop vac on. We hung a flag above the door, checked out the gourmet grocery store. I got a mower I can ride around the yard, but we haven't got real friends.
And now even the fake ones have stopped calling. Maybe if you forget to hide the keys, I'll take a ride to Applebee's. Come home drunk on daiquiris and throw up on the neighbor's lawn. If you need me, I'll be downstairs with the shop vac. You can call, but it probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop vac on. But you'll be okay because you'll be upstairs with the TV. You can cry and it probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop vac on. I like the Starbucks here, that's better than the other one, cause the other one's not as good. They really need to put a light there, cause it's hard to turn, it's hard to make a left turn. And when it's time to go to bed, still awake inside my head, floating up above the house and looking down, I guess I gotta go back there. I guess there never was any other answer. And as the freeway hums, the cars go by, the headlights roll across the sky, many miles away, and I can see them speeding through the dark. If you need me, I'll be downstairs with the shop vac. You can call, but it probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop vac on. But you'll be okay, cause you'll be upstairs with the TV. You can cry and it probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop vac on.
Jonathan Colton performing Shop Vac. He's got a brand new performance DVD called Best Concert Ever. We're talking about dad stuff right now, but I introduced you as a man with a lot of songs on unusual topics. It seems like you really enjoy. Engaging the emotional content of a very odd perspective. I think you have this great song called I Crush Everything that is a really good example of that.
Yes, that's about a giant squid who hates himself. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's something about... it's true, I do it over and over again. I'm not content to write songs about myself. I mean, ultimately I do, you know, that's the joke, is that what happens is you start writing about a self-loathing giant squid and haha, it's you. It's really you you're writing about. I think in some ways it's a trick that I have to play on myself to get myself to write in an honest way. But it's also, you know, I love puzzles more than anything else. And so to say, okay, this is about a giant squid who hates himself, means that I need to then sort of unravel that and figure out how to make that work. And it's just a much more interesting process to write a song about that than it is to start and write a song about myself.
That's funny to me because that's a real IT guy's approach to writing a song, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you sort of start with. You start with the where you want to be. Like, here's what I want this song to do. Here's how I want it to work. Here's how I want the finished application to behave. And then you have to figure out how to build it and make it happen.
Well, let's hear it.
All right. I lie below. You float above. In the pretty white ships that I've been dreaming of. And I'd like to swim beside you, getting dizzy in your wake, getting close enough to touch you, getting brave enough to take you into my arms and bring you down to be with me. But I can't do that thing anymore.
can't be the thing I was before. Maybe I am better off alone, because I crush everything, and I crush everything, and I crush everything. My body's strong, but my will is weak. I've got pretty nice arms, but I hate my beak. And the dolphins are all phonies. They seem nice enough at first, but they pretend to be your friend until they see you at your worst, and then they leave you without a word. They swim away. So I can't do that thing anymore. I can't be the thing I was before. Maybe I am better off alone, because I crush everything, and I crush everything, and I crush everything. Everything I want, I take, and everything I love, I break, and every night I lie awake. The world spin round. Does it matter that much when you're 10 miles down? And in the light that filters down into my giant yellow eye, I can see the sails unfolding, stretching wide against the sky. And I forgive them, I forgive, and I let go. Can't do that thing anymore. I can't be the thing I was before. Maybe I am better off alone, because I crush everything, and I crush everything, and I crush everything. You float above in the pretty white ships that I am dreaming of.
Jonathan Colton on The Sound of Young America. We'll have more with Jonathan in just a minute when we come back.
Production of The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com.
The Sound of Young America is a proud sponsor of Sketchfest NYC, June 11th through 13th at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York City. See the best sketch comedy from around the country, including Kevin McDonald of the Kids in the Hall, The Whitest Kids You Know, Elephant Larry, and much, much more. For more information, visit sketchfestnyc.com. Welcome back to The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton. Let's get back to my interview. You have a lot of songs about geeky stuff. And one of the things, one of those songs is about a very unusual thing to be geeky about, which is author and raconteur George Plimpton.
Sure. You think that's unusual? I guess it is.
You know, I've been to a few of your shows, and folks are just really so excited to hear your song about like a Mandelbrot set. Mandelbrot set, one of your most popular songs, is about Mandelbrot, the mathematician.
Yes.
And fractals.
Yes.
And how great fractals are.
Yeah.
And you know, you got a lot of material in that vein that people respond to very strongly. And then you bring out something that it's clear that you feel equally passionate about as the guy with the you know, t-shirt that lights up when there's Wi-Fi feels about Mandelbrot. You clearly feel the same way about George Plimpton.
I guess that's true. In that sense, it's like that song is for a different audience, maybe. The genesis of this song was actually somebody pointed out to me that there was an organization, I cannot remember their name right now, but they were, I think it's maybe Plimpton.org or something, but they were an organization dedicated to getting a statue of George Plimpton erected somewhere in Manhattan, which I think is a worthy goal. They were holding a George Plimpton songwriting contest.
This wasn't a contest for George Plimpton to write a song.
No.
This was for songwriters to write songs about George Plimpton.
Thank you for that clarification. Yes. I saw it as a challenge, but I also am a fan of George Plimpton. I have long admired people like him who have these kinds of careers where they just seem to do everything. You know, and he's a writer, and he was an actor, and especially since he was doing all this participatory journalism, he played on a pro football team, he boxed with actual boxers, and, you know, and...
The punching kind,
and it's just, he just experienced so much in his life, it's just a very admirable... spirit, I think, and at the time I was maybe about halfway through Thing a Week, which is what I started doing when I first left the day job, was to put a new song out there every Friday for a year, and I was about halfway through, and you know, I was getting some positive response, but I was not really sure that it was going to work, and I was still sort of terrified that I had made a horrible error. So in many ways, you know, this song, it started out being just sort of a laundry list of stuff that George Plimpton did, you know, and that might be enough. But I sort of hated it until I realized that I was actually giving myself a pep talk. And then it sort of shifted and it made sense. And that's become one of my favorites from that whole series of songs.
It's called A Talk with George. You want to play it?
Sure.
There's a tall, thin man standing in the shadows. When he calls your name, his voice is strong and clear. It's a dark and smoky place, so you can't quite see his face. He pulls you close and whispers in your ear. And he tells you he was born into some money, but it didn't mean he had to sit around. And he knows a thing or two about the things that you should do if you don't want to take life lying down. First of all, hang out a lot with Hemingway. Spend some time fighting bulls in Spain. You should go three rounds with Archie Moore and Sugar Ray. It's so damn scary you won't mind the pain. Be ringside at the rumble in the jungle. Make friends with Hunter S. and Jackie O. When they shoot poor Bobby down, you wrestle Sirhan to the ground. Love your friends and miss them when they go. You should write a book or two and start a magazine. Even if it never makes a dime, swing out by your feet above the circus ring. At the very least, throw parties all the time. Cause time and tide will never care. It's not so far from here to there. We just go cause there isn't time and space to do it all. Love the things you try, drink a cocktail, wear a tie, show a little grace if you should fall. Don't live another day unless you make it count for someone else that you're supposed to be. There's someone deep inside of you that still wants out. Shame on you if you don't set it free.
Jonathan Colton on The Sound of Young America, a singer, songwriter, raconteur, has played a little bit of professional football, right? You literally followed in.
No, I'm sorry. Maybe I wasn't clear. I didn't literally follow. That's a sort of a metaphor.
A what?
Metaphor?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You got nothing.
Yeah,
I got
sorry.
Nothing here. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm over your head. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have this new song that I don't know a lot about called Space Doggedy.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned to me, when we were talking before we went on the air that you, wrote this song about Laika the space dog, which was the Russian dog that was put into the first space capsule.
That's right. Sputnik 2.
Why write a song about this dog?
Well, it's going to sound like all I do is songwriting contests.
Uh-huh.
This is another songwriting contest that I was participating in.
Well, I think it's interesting because you mentioned you entered that other songwriting contest as part of this challenge that you had put for yourself.
Yeah.
To write a song or record a song every week for a year.
Yeah.
It seems like you like to set yourself up to have to work.
I hate to think of it that way, but you're probably right. I mean, it's because sometimes it's the only way I can actually get work done is to have a challenge that I can't back down from. You know,
a songwriting contest is also a puzzle to solve.
Exactly, and this one, they gave you not a topic, but a sort of direction. The assignment here was to write a song that was an homage to David Bowie's Space Oddity. And that was pretty much the only requirement. But I said, okay, let's do the dog story, you know. And I was reading up about it, and because recently some news came out from the Russians that they were actually not entirely truthful about Laika's experience the first time around. And in fact, she did not live in the capsule for 4 days as planned, but she started having trouble pretty early on in the flight, and the cooling system failed, and her heart rate went up, and it was a really bad trip for a poor little dog who didn't know what was going on. So I sort of reimagined that story as if perhaps she somehow gets the upper hand, figures out what's going on, and manages to escape from the capsule.
Cage is very small, a tiny silver ball that makes you a hero. The moment you step inside, the world is watching you. What you're about to do will live on forever, even though you'll be dead and gone. Buckle up, we're about to turn the engines on. Hello from Sputnik 2, I am receiving you. Thanks for the dog food, I'm somewhere above you now. Guess what, Milashin cough? I took the collar off, I'm holding my own leash, walking myself outside this door. I don't think I want to be a good dog anymore. Now I'm floating free and the moon's with me and it's bright enough light the dark, and it's so high up here, and the stars so clear. Are they close enough? Will they hear me bark from here? Moscow to Sputnik 2, I think we're losing you. Your life signs are fading. We can't really say that we're surprised. It's a shame. There is always something that gets compromised. Now I'm floating free in the moon. Spin me, and it's bright enough to light the dark, and it's so high up here, and the stars so clear. Are they close enough? Will they hear me bark from here?
Singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton on The Sound of Young America. It was occurring to me, you really have relatively, for a funny singer-songwriter, you have very few joke songs. You've got a really lovely, ironic cover of Baby Got Back. I'd probably call it a joke song. And you got a song about Tom Cruise crazy, about Tom Cruise being crazy on his own special, in his own special way.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a joke song.
Yeah.
But even your jokiest songs are often not very jokey.
Yeah, the many people have pointed out, including me, that the best songs are the ones that you think are funny the first time you hear them, and every time you listen to them, they get sadder and sadder until they're so sad that you can't listen to them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's I'm serious. I'm quite serious. That's my favorite thing. I mean, that giant squid song is that's a pretty sad song, but you know, it's funny to watch audiences respond to it because, you know, it sounds ridiculous when I set it up. This is about a giant squid who hates himself. Ha ha ha. You know, and then I play it and there are a couple of jokes in there about the dolphins being sort of smug and having phony smiles and they laugh. And I can always tell how new an audience is by how much they laugh at that song. 'Cause the audiences that are mostly people who have seen me many times, it's dead quiet throughout that song. But audiences that are just hearing it for the first time, they laugh. And I love that kind of audience sucker punch that happens about halfway through that song when they realize I'm not joking.
One of my all-time favorites of your songs is a song called Skull Crusher Mountain that is written from the perspective of an evil genius / supervillain. Tell me why you chose to write from that perspective.
Well, you know, I found it's yet another example of a monstrous personality who feels as though he is misunderstood, and this is one of my favorite topics. I love the unreliable narrator, but the slight twist where the narrator is horrible and doesn't get what the problem is, and. You know, I think we're all like that. Ultimately, we're all hurting people without knowing it, you know, and what we're doing seems totally reasonable in our own heads. And to someone else with a different perspective, we look like monsters.
It's not surprising because, you know, sort of like comic book narratives and so on are often the sort of the two sides of geekiness, right? It's like somebody who, it's like Spider-Man science experiments turn him into this, you know, super powerful creature or whatever. And the supervillain has the problem of having the best of intentions, but not really understanding how things work socially. You know, he has that sort of like geeky 13-year-old boy problem of not necessarily understanding exactly what the effects of his actions in his social context are going to be.
Yeah, and it's true. And all, you know, I feel like in comic books, the villain is almost always bent on some kind of revenge, whether it's against a specific nemesis or just a sort of general mistreatment from peers in society in general, you know. So, yeah, and I think that's, you know, ultimately it's very sad for both superheroes and supervillains. With being super comes terrible sadness.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
It's horrible for me. Well, let's hear it. Jonathan Coulton with Skull Crusher Mountain.
Welcome to my secret lair on Skullcrusher Mountain. I hope that you've enjoyed your stay so far. I see you've met my assistant Scarface. His appearance is quite disturbing, but I assure you he's harmless enough. He's a sweetheart, calls me master, and he has a way of finding pretty things and bringing them to me. Oh, and I'm so into you, but I'm way too smart for you. Even my henchmen think I'm crazy. I'm not surprised that you agree. If you could find some way to be a little bit less afraid of me, you'd see the voices that control me from inside my head say I shouldn't kill you yet. I made this half pony, half monkey monster to please you, but I get the feeling that you don't like it. What's with all the screaming? You like monkeys, you like ponies. Maybe you don't like monsters so much. Maybe I use too many monkeys. Isn't it enough to know that I ruined a pony making a gift for you? Oh, and I'm so into you, but I'm way too smart for you. Even my henchmen think I'm crazy. I'm not surprised that you agree. If you could find some way to be a little bit less afraid of me, you'd see the voices that control me from inside my head say I shouldn't kill you yet. And picture the two of us alone inside my golden submarine, while up above the waves my doomsday squad ignites the atmosphere. And all the fools who lead their foolish lives may find it quite explosive. Well, it won't mean half as much to me if I don't have you here. You know it isn't easy living here on Skullcrusher Mountain, so maybe you could cut me just a little slack. Would it kill you to be civil? I've been patient, I've been gracious, and this mountain is covered with wolves. Hear them howling, my hungry children. Maybe you should stay and have another drink and think about me and you. Oh, 'cause I'm so into you, but I'm way too smart for you. Even my henchmen think I'm crazy. I'm not surprised that you agree. If you could find some way to be a little bit less afraid of me, you'd see the voices that control me from inside my head say I shouldn't kill you yet. I shouldn't kill you yet. I shouldn't kill you yet.
Jonathan Coulton on The Sound of Young America. You know, we were talking before you went on the air about your new concert DVD. It's the first time you've had actual distribution, that you've sold your musical product the way musical product had been sold for the previous, you know, 75 years.
Yes.
You know, in stores, like music stores or Best Buys or whatever.
Not to mention, this is an old-fashioned, high production value product. This is not just, you know, somebody's flip camera and then you put it up on YouTube. This is serious business.
Yeah, this is no joke. It's really interesting to me because you've built this community of fans and have built a living out of having that, like a good living out of having that community of fans at this point. What did you think about the idea of extending yourself beyond that, outside of that?
Well, it was important to me to get a live version of some of this music out there because there's quite a bit of difference between the live performances of the songs and the studio recordings. Because when I do studio recordings, I do full arrangements and I play all the different instruments and it's a sort of a full band thing. But when I tour, I can't afford to do it with a full band either in terms of time or money. So it's just an acoustic situation. And it's a much more, the songs change, a lot of them get a lot more intimate. And on top of that, that community of fans means that the experience of me being on stage and the fans being in the audience creates this thing, this story, this event that happens in the hall. And it's not just, this is why people will always go to live music, is that the experience of seeing the artist there performing the stuff is a completely different thing. Something happens there. And there is a real conversation that happens between the audience and the artist. And, you know, just the energy pulling back and forth and people shouting out jokes and me making mistakes and everybody getting really excited when I make mistakes. It's the whole thing is like, I don't know. It's a very exciting thing to do. And I forget until the moment I step out on stage and then I remember. So, you know, I really wanted to capture that and, you know, doing it through a distribution company is sort of an experiment for me to see what it's like in the old-fashioned universe of putting CDs in stores. They still have stores, I think, where people come and buy things, you know, and I've never had a presence there. And I'm curious to see what happens and if there's anything for me there or if I really am just an internet superstar, you know?
You've built this really amazing world. I mean, it's just really remarkable. And you can see the kind of the emotional resonance that your music has for the people in the crowd at your show. You know, when you go to your show, it's really amazing. Do you ever worry that it's limiting to you to be living in this world that you've created? Do you ever worry that you're missing out by not, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, opening for John Mayer or something like that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's, I hope that all, I suspect that all artists feel this way. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm the only loser. But every time I see some other musician, I think, that person is actually a professional musician, unlike me. You know, and I've come to know a few actual working musicians who are considered actual famous people, you know, and it's always fascinating talking to them because, I find that we all sort of think we're not very good at guitar, you know, and we all imagine that there's something else that we're supposed to be doing, some other kind of musician that we're supposed to be that we are not getting to somehow. On the one hand, I'm incredibly grateful to be making a living making music. But bottom line, this is just, I can't imagine anything better. On the other hand, sure, I do kind of feel like, oh, now here I am trapped by my success. I'm putting quotes around all this.
Now you're never going to tour with the top.
Right. Exactly. I probably will never have a gold record. Gold records are maybe a phenomenon of the past anyway, you know? So it's definitely a weird thing having come up through the internet, to realize that there's still this big world out there that is not the internet, that I'm not really much of a part of. Yeah, it's definitely something I think about.
Speaking of John Mayer, have you ever considered possibly starting an electric blues band and or a stand-up comedy career?
I don't have the chops for either one of those things.
What about dating Jessica Simpson? Have you ever considered that?
I have considered it. She will not return my phone calls.
Disappointing.
I know.
Well, it's so great to have you. I feel like we should have a grand finale. And your tour mates of these past several years are the charming and delightful funny music duo Paul and Storm.
That's right.
They happen to be sitting in my living room at the moment. Shall we invite them in and have you join them on one last song?
I think we should do that. That would be fun.
So what's this last song we're going to hear, Jonathan?
This is called Always the Moon, and this is a breakup song, and the story of the breakup is sort of alluded to through creation myths and metaphors. We were talking about the word metaphor. This is an example of that.
A metaphor is like if you say, here's an apple, and then you hand me an apple.
No, that's just me handing you an apple. A metaphor is like if I say, this apple is my soul. Here, Jesse Thorne, eat it.
Can I have an apple?
No.
Okay, why don't you just sing the song?
I'll just sing the song.
Before there ever was a you and me, the endless void of a dark black sea and a giant oyster, the mother of all things. And the oyster made a pearl, and the pearl became the world, and the world began to turn, and the sun began to burn, and one day I met you and I fell in love, and you broke my tender heart, and so here we are. But there was always the moon, there was always the moon, there was always the moon, there was always the moon. Before there ever was you and me, the slender branch of a gentle tree and a big red fruit that hung low to the ground. And you picked it out of spite, and you took a careless bite, and the world was not the same, and we all know who to blame. So now when you think of me, do you think of when there was still a chance? But it's over, so here we are. But there was always the moon, there was always the moon, there was always the moon, there was always the moon. Remember when there was a you and me, when there was such a thing as gravity, and the tide came in and the tide went out again. But the water got too high, and the sun began to die, and I tried to make you stay, but the world pulled you away, and now there are darker, longer, colder nights, and the sun has gone for good, and so here we are. But there is always the moon, there is always the moon, there is always the moon, there is always the moon.
Jonathan Colton performing Always the Moon with able accompaniment from Paul and Storm. Jonathan, thank you so much for coming back on The Sound of Young America. It's always so great to have you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you having me here.
Paul and Storm, thank you so much for providing those lovely harmonic vocals.
Thank you.
Jonathan Colton's brand new live concert DVD is called Best Concert Ever. That's best, period, concert, period, ever. Period. He's online at jonathancolton.com. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I have been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our theme music written and performed by Dan Grayson with help from myself. Interstitial music provided by Dan Wally. Our editor is Nick White. You can find us online at MaximumFun.org, and you can always email me at jesse@MaximumFun.org. We'll see you next time, right here on The Sound of Young America.